Just a little more time is all we're asking for. Just a little more time could open doors and doors. Just a little uncertainty can bring it down. Nobody wants to show you how. So if you're locked on your own, you can never surrender. And if your life won't lead you home, you can never surrender. And when the night is cold and dark.
Good evening and welcome to the 51st podcast of the Never Give Up Show. I am Bailey Smith, your host. I'm so grateful to be able to do these shows weekly. I'm honored, thankful to my guests, to my listeners. Really, truly, it's a blessing to be able to continue to do this every week, give a voice to those that don't have a voice, that are in the process of dealing with horrific situations or surviving horrific situations or are fighting or struggling, and to have professionals on who are able to give us a ton of information, help us bring awareness, constantly teach us new things. So I'm extremely thankful to all of you out there who support the Never Give Up Show. Tonight's guest is both a survivor, fighter, and professional, and I'm really excited to have her on our show. She's a part of Families Against Court Travesties. I speak about this organization weekly that I am lucky to be a part of, and they can be found on Facebook. Again, Families Against Court Travesties. They do amazing things to help those that are going through family court and post-separation horrific situations, and she has become a member recently of Florida Protective Parents Association that, again, are also doing amazing things that can be found on Facebook and on Instagram, Florida Protective Parents Association. Really incredible people that I am lucky to advocate with. I'm going to introduce our guest. Tonight's guest is Jennifer Adams, and Jennifer's life challenges have been surmounted through a combination of determination, believing the best in people, resourcefulness, and being an influential agent for positive change with a servant leader mindset. As Executive Director of Florida Community Partnership and industry leader in the creation of innovative legislation, policy, community engagement, and implementation framework methods, Jennifer strengthened efforts to develop solution-focused-based best practices for successful outcomes to complex initiatives. Jennifer currently serves as a board director for the LWVOC and LWVFL, and also chairs the LWVFL State Advocacy and Social Services Social Justice Committees. I'm sorry. She passionately focuses her advocacy on increasing civic engagement, empowering and mentoring women and girls, and ending the dysfunction and abuse that occurs to female domestic violence survivors and their children in the family and domestic violence court. Jennifer has a degree in communications from the University of Florida, Master of Law degree, and is a Clark Fox Policy Leader and Graduate Merit Scholar, Master of Policy Candidate from Washington University in St. Louis. Additionally, she is a Florida Supreme Court Certified Circuit Court Mediator, Guardian ad litem, and serves on a board, broad range of government and nonprofit advisory boards at the local, state, and national levels. Okay, I botched that and I apologize. Our call in number is 516-531-9643, 516-531-9643. We'd love to hear from you. I believe Jennifer, with all these amazing things that she does and all these boards that she's on, is fighting in her own court battle, and I will bring her on so she can tell us more about it. Welcome, Jennifer. I'm so sorry, I botched someone up. Welcome.
No worries, Kelly. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being on. I appreciate it too. So,
absolutely.
You have like so many like degrees and are involved in so many, I don't even know what these organizations, we didn't get a chance to talk before the show. I don't even know, like you're on all these boards and you have all these things that you're involved in, but you're still dealing with court battles and things like that. So, you know, anyone. And I would love for you to share, you know, your story from wherever you want till now, so our listeners can hear and, you know what you're dealing with and how you're dealing with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, often this world feels upside down, and a lot of times many of the agencies and the professionals who should be helping are not. And in fact, many are causing more harm by not protecting our children. Divorce is a $50 billion industry, and it is growing. So while there is a legislative and legal structure and statutes that are supposed to be followed, family court, domestic violence court, they're in the civil court. And so the burden of proof, the evidence, the process has gives judges a lot more discretion. And so that breeds a ground for the more money, then the more things that can churn and can go on and continue, and the issue at hand, which is and should be seeing kids' best interests and well-being, should be first and foremost, are too often not the case, and there isn't a lot of accountability as well as standardization. And I'm not putting this all on judges. However, it's something that is difficult to not everybody understands. It's not something that somebody can just go in and figure it out. And a lot of times, you know, and you have to have money to be represented in civil court. It's not like even in criminal where you get a public defender, or you get a, you know, somebody like that. So, this happens to every person. I am no exception, unfortunately. You know, one in nearly three women is a victim of domestic violence and abuse, mm-hmm. and that is a shocking statistic. The some other statistics, 58,000 children a year in the United States are placed in the custody of their abusers when abuse is reported. let me read that to you again. 58,000 children a year in the U.S. are placed in the custody of their abusers when abuse is reported. Professionals often downplay abuse, even though research shows over 90% of claims are valid. Mm-hmm. Abuse is dismissed, even when there is evidence of abuse. And abuse doesn't have to be just physical. Abuse, you know, social media. Kids are committing suicide from social media. So this fallacy that only, you know, you have to have a bruise or a broken bone or some kind of physical trauma for it to be abuse is ignorant, really, and it's wrong. And the research shows this. We have the birth childhood experiences, which shows that the harm that this brings to victims and children, especially. In addition, junk science and false claims are made against the reporting party. There is no such thing as parental alienation, even though often people that are quote unquote experts use it all the time. It has not been adopted, and it was actually refuted by the American Psychological Association, yet it's still being put forth with no research or scientific basis. In addition, custody evaluators often favor those who pay for the evaluation, who most often are the abusers. A really sad statistic is protective parents spend on average over $100,000 trying to protect their own children. And more than 27%, more than a quarter of them, have to declare bankruptcy. However, with getting awareness and with communities and others out there talking about this and realizing it's not just happening to them, and doing that through, you know, mechanisms like your podcast, which is really important to get this information out so people hear this and can understand, and educating and having not just policy, but also getting the users, the people that are in the community, the victims that are having these, you know, getting re-victimized by the system, and the children being forced to go to their abusers. I mean, the more people talk and we can hold these courtrooms mm-hmm. accountable, and as well mm-hmm. as these experts mm-hmm. accountable, these guardian ad litem, these mental health quote unquote experts, the attorneys, then we'll be able to improve and people can know what's going on, as well as what is, you know, not going on. And so I think that that if people are really concerned and really care about children who are our future, then they must open their eyes and realize what is going on, because it's causing severe economic as well impact to mm-hmm. our country. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the trillions, domestic violence does. So this is really important stuff. So I really appreciate you bringing it to the forefront.
My pleasure. Do you hear me? Because I was in and out before.
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay. So I think, by the way, it went from a $50 billion business to an 80, by the way. I think the most recent statistics on family court, the whole community or, you know, organization is an $80 billion business, by the way. I think it was 50 and it went up to 80. But domestic violence is the number one killer of women across the world. So, you know, these are facts stated where I'm stated. These are facts that can be found by going on the internet. So, you know, it's so hard to fathom when you're not in a situation and actually going through it. It's very hard to fathom that it's blind eyes are being turned every which way. So, you know, the only way, like you said, is the only way for any change to happen is is the numbers, is us coming forward in numbers. And I think that in the last couple of months, I would say the last 6 months, even the last few months, I've seen such a huge influx of people coming forward on every different platform, and social media, in the news, you know, celebrities, you know, and we need more of it, and we need it fast. So I think people are starting a little bit to open their eyes, not enough, not fast enough, but I think it's happening more and more, and you know, that's the only way we're going to ever get changed. But I just wanted to make a comment on parental alienation. I think that it's a word that is misused because you guys still there? Do you hear me still?
I hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think it's a word that's misused because when a child is kept from a protective parent, okay, they're being alienated from their child. I think it was taken and misused and thrown around in court that it made it become a very dangerous word. Because really that's what's happening. Children are being alienated from a parent. It's a big problem when like abuse. Child abuse is a very dangerous, or domestic violence. Those are dangerous words in court and is used against you unless you have a criminal case against the other party, the abuser, and and that is brought into family court, which a lot of times it's not, and that's the biggest problem. If you have a criminal case or charges, legitimate charges against someone you're in the middle of divorcing, those I don't know if they always are, but they should and have to be taken into consideration, because you can't be an abuser or you can't be in the middle of a criminal case, and I'm talking about violence or addictions or whatever, and be a good parent at the same time. It's impossible. So
I will say you bring up a good point. However, oftentimes, because it's a civil, it's never going to go over to the criminal, right? And so a lot of times there are overlaps, and every circuit, to a certain extent, can operate a little bit differently. They don't have to have the same kinds of divisions, the same kind of courts, whether it's like problem solving or drug courts, or, you know, so they have some autonomy there. In addition, there's a serious problem with judges having this, they have this mindset, some of them, that if there is violence or abuse that's going on to the protective parent, that, well, that doesn't mean it's going to happen to the child, common sense as well as research shows and statistics that is not the case. And so often continues to put the victim in the presence of, as well as the child, of the abuser who has a restraining order. And often those restraining order violations, I've had them. I've had them be charged, but they usually plea out and they don't even prosecute them because a lot of times the state attorneys, they're already overworked, and they want to just get them off their caseload.
You're just a number.
Exactly. Exactly. And then there's little communication between those judges and then the abuser claims, oh, I got off, I was not found guilty. And for some reason, the judges usually just believe the testimony of the person that has just committed a crime. So go figure. But there's a lot of defying logic that's going on, and that's why I think the research and the data, like you're saying, and the statistics, they really need to be brought in, and they need to come in with all of the other, you know, social determinants of health and how it benefits everybody, because domestic violence and child abuse is, and human trafficking, I mean, all of these things are prevalent in all of our neighborhoods.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
And it all
live.
Goes hand in hand. And it goes hand in hand. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you're an abuser, then you're, and there are children involved in the home, then it's also child abuse. And this is where they separate the two. Why I brought up what I was saying before about, you know, having criminal charges or against you, I got very lucky because I fought like crazy to get my ex locked up. And I was able to get a restraining order, and I had that restraining order when I got my divorce. And you know, it all helped, it all benefited me, but what I had to go through to get everything was a fight. And when you're going through so much hell, it's so hard to fight. And, you know, it's incredible how, you know, so many of the women that we meet through Families Against Court Travesties or Florida Protective Parents, or even people that I've networked or advocated for or helped throughout the U.S., different states. It's incredible. Well, let's just talk about in Florida right now, because that's what I'm seeing on the forefront. It's incredible how these women are still suffering and going through their hell and their nightmare, and they're still advocating. And I want to applaud them, and you as well, because I don't really know your story, but to be able to do all the things that you're doing and still going through a fight, it's incredible. I would have never, ever been able to have done what I'm doing now while I was going through my horrible time. So, you know, really, really, all the women that are out there, or men that are out there, because this is not, we're not gender biased here. There are many, many women out there, moms that should not be moms. And, you know, down the road, we'll bring on more men, you know, to hear their stories. It just, there hasn't been an opportunity lately. But, you know, it's incredible. Anyway, let's bring Jeanette on. Jeanette, if you want to unmute yourself, because you're open.
I don't know how to unmute myself.
You're on mute. You're on.
Okay.
You're on.
Hi, hey, hi, Jennifer. It's been
Welcome.
A pleasure. Thank you, both of you.
Hey, Jeanette, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm very thankful that both of you now are part of my life, and that the groups that we're involved in are really trying to make a huge impact, not only in our state of Florida, but also in the country. It's really wonderful that we're all uniting and coming together.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
And it's really sad that it all happened because of a little boy's death.
Yeah, I know. And
yeah, you're talking about Grayson.
Yeah, that's how I got connected. I think a lot of people, that's how Florida Protective Parents started. Families Against Court Travesties have been doing their work over 20 years. But I got connected to them because of Grayson. And I think Jeanette also. So it's
yeah.
sad. It's very sad that we all have come together, and I think by the end of 2022 we are going to be triple. because there are always people joining. There are always people wanting. There's so many people that want to help and want to be a part of. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people that need the help. But I'm sorry. Go on, Jeanette. I could talk.
Say even more so now that the Violence Against Women's Act has been signed by President Biden and reauthorized, because adding the same kind of language that Grayson's Law for the state of Florida, what we wanted to do, it is now in national hands that we all around the country can take that language and go to our state legislators and try to pass the law that goes hand in hand with it. So I think that this next year is going to be really pivotal in changing this country with regards to domestic violence, protecting children, and adding coercive control language to domestic violence laws, because as we all know, as survivors, a huge portion of domestic abuse is nonviolent.
Right.
Especially with children.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as well as even if there hasn't been a history per se of violent behavior in the past, if coercive control is an issue, you know, and there's substance abuse as well, you know, issues in addition, if there, I mean, there's a whole litany, you know, it can happen. And instead of protecting, like for instance, you know, like we're talking about Grace and, you know, and the Kessler and the horrible loss with what, you know, his mom's been experiencing and is being super strong and making, you know, making a real difference is Florida. And Florida has preserved families, but is losing kids. And what I mean by that is that for whatever reason, lawmakers and judges think 50-50 is the way to go. Without looking at the factors, without looking at substance abuse, without looking at mental health, without doing these things, and as a result, you know, in the past, I think it's been the past 5 years, 477 children have been killed by their abusive parents. 477 kids that could have been prevented, and these are kids that have had interaction with DCF before, that with the Department of Children and Families before,
and we're not even talking about the moms.
Exactly.
We're not even talking about the moms. I mean, I don't even know what number that is. And again, dads, there was a story recently of a woman that murdered her husband somewhere, whatever. I read it somewhere, but, and I don't know if it was in Florida, but, you know, it's horrible. It's all very horrible. And
yeah,
go on.
No, I was just going to say, no, it is. And, you know, our state agency, DCF, you know, they do a lot of great programs. But when it comes to getting funding and having oversight and having, you know, enough social investigators, and, I mean, their investigations are not even required to include evidence. I mean, it's when you get down into the details, it's quite pathetic in terms of what is guiding these investigations.
It's contradiction. It's all contradiction, because you have cases that need the investigation, and suggestions or when they go in and they recommendations. Thank you, Jeanette. There are recommendations, but then who's following up on that? No one. No one's assigned to it, and it's not given into the court as you know, evidence. The court's not making any decisions. You know, are not make. It's not being given into the court. Put it into. You know, so it should be, you know, go into effect. So what's the whole use? What are they? What is, or they're removing children from homes that they shouldn't be removing them. So to me, DCF is a disaster. I know that it's a disaster down here in Florida. I know it's a disaster in many states, and you know they say, you know, DCF is really, it's a, it's the kidnapping kids, and they're being used for human sex trafficking, and the whole system is a disaster. It's a disaster, and like you said before, it's a billion. It's in the very high $1 billion business, and I call it an organization. And it's everybody's pocketing money, and nobody is giving a crap about our children. And as a mother of young adult children and a teenager who have been through hell in my post-separation, I could tell you, you know, if we don't fix this, we are not going to have a future. We will not have future generation of healthy children to run this country. We're just not.
Well, it's also
horrific.
it's tragic ignorance to think that what they're looking for are physical evidence, which most child abuse and most trauma that children are going through are not physical bruises, but mental and emotional ones.
Yeah, I completely agree. And they don't even and you know that it's being misguided. Like, look, there are some good people that I know are in DCF, and DCF is our state organization for child welfare. And there are some good people. The problem is it is so massive. There's so much red tape, and the people that are in the home are so far removed from the top, right? And so there's this huge gap. And so, you know, their child maltreatment index and what they're supposed to follow is not followed, right? And it's a bunch of cut and paste. They're making and these investigators, they don't have credentials in terms of their, they don't have a particular trauma informed, you know, license or something, you know. So it's like playing Russian roulette with children's lives,
right.
And the department, they about 10 years ago changed their policies to push families staying together and not taking kids out of a parent's home. And so, and instead they rely on these quote unquote safety plans, which are basically a promise written by the parent that's doing bad, that they will not do anything bad anymore. And what happens is there's, like you said, there's no follow up, and it fails again and again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids still are made to go there. And a lot of times the judges will say, well, call DCF. The teachers in the schools, call DCF. Call DCF.
And
DCF is not the answer.
Police say, call DCF. DCF says, bring it to court. It's like everybody puts the finger on someone else. In the meantime, you have a child being abused in a bad situation, and time goes by, and there's more damage and more damage that is going to take more and more time to be undone if we ever get to that point, which I pray we do in many cases. So it's just horrible. I don't have any words anymore to say, because it's so friggin' broken. I do want to give out our number again, 516-531-9643. We're also obviously live on blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk. And I will be uploading the show to SoundCloud and Buzzsprout. And from Buzzsprout, there'll be a couple of other platforms the show will be on. And it's archived. So if you didn't get to listen to it tonight, you can listen to it another night. But we'd love to hear from you. Jennifer, I would love if you're able to share how, you know, what you've been through or what you're going through, if you're able to, and what got you involved in some of these organizations. And
I'm happy to. So, you know, with a divorce, unfortunately, even when it's final, it's never final if there are children involved. And until you know, they become adults at the age of 18. And so, you know, I was married for nearly 10 years to who I went into marrying, never thought that they would, you know, treat me in a way and would lie to me and would, you know, have affairs on me and would, you know, excuse all their behaviors and it build up to the point where they're punching holes in the wall next to my head and are taking OxyContin pills that are being mailed to them in a self-addressed envelope, you know, from a friend. I couldn't take it anymore, you know, and part of the problem, you know, the faith community and parents, a lot of times, you know, they, until it gets to a certain point, they can't understand how bad it is unless they've experienced it themselves, right? And so, in addition, there's a lot of, well, you're married. You need to stay married. You know, you made a vow and a commitment. And so, you know, I'm a big person about honoring and doing those things. But when it came to not being able to be okay with my kids, thinking that is a normal relationship in an okay way to behave, and then I no more. And so so I was living in Georgia, and so I took my kids and was able to get an emergency injunction and came down to Florida, where I'm from and my parents live, and then my ex came and moved down here, and he used the court to abuse me even more, to financially abuse me, to abuse me with ongoing litigation. I got remarried, and I married. My advocacy and my care for others is not good for my dating selection.
Right.
So I married another version of an abuser. And so they eventually, you know, ganged up on me and this is through I had to fight for years to get back pain and child support. I had to continually, you know, my children were being chased by their dad, and had to call 911 and were found in we're talking kindergarten, first grader, and my ex trying to break into my house. This whole time before this happened, I was getting nasty emails, nasty notes, calling me every name in the book, and I better watch out, and he's gonna take me down, and all these things, and this is somebody who's got a criminal history. I didn't know this before I married him. But then, you know, once you start looking and DUIs, continue to DUIs with my, you know, going to pick up kids from school. There's a really lengthy list. And however,
I have, can I just stop you one second? Right before I got on the show, I was talking to a person I haven't spoken to in a long time. And I knew she was going through a bad situation. and she was the exact same stuff. They're separated, and he has been charged with DUIs and theft and all kinds of different things, and he has to drive a car with a breathalyzer in there or something like that. Like it's
my ex has that too.
And in the meantime, the kids are living with him because it's not safe for her to live there, and she's the one that's living with a family member, and it's just like, how do you have a person who has a DUI that is not allowed to drink whatsoever, okay, from the court, living with children? Why is that normal? Like, he's not going to get in the car if he's an addict with his kids?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, it is astounding to me how judges don't understand how substance abuse negatively impacts anyone else, right? Like, let alone children, right? Like, so, number one, those ignition interlock devices, there's different ways that they can try and go around them with compressed air, with different things. Also, they can take, they can rent a car. My ex would rent cars, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what amazes me is that these judges think that these people that have already broken the law are going to continue to not break the law, or they're going to do what the judge says. It just again defies logic, and how somehow a monitoring device on the car, which by the way doesn't test for if you take too many pills, doesn't test for drugs, doesn't test for any of that stuff. But how about when they're not driving? You're saying that the child is safe because they're not, just because they're not driving? You know what I mean? Like, it's really messed up. And a lot of times too, with the addictions, there's mental health issues as well. I mean,
yeah,
for my ex, there is,
it goes hand in hand, because somebody that is an addict has had childhood trauma, some sort of trauma in their life, and they're self-medicating. It goes hand in hand. And either they get help because they want to get help and they're able to get help, and sometimes their mental health is so far beyond repair. So, you know, there's different kinds of, I want everybody to know this, there are different kinds of mental health issues. You know, I have children who have childhood trauma from witnessing what they witnessed, and they all got help, are getting help, and will continue to get help, and so am I, 6 years in, because it doesn't go away, but you can't stop getting help, number one. But those kind of mental health issues, you don't get normal again, because you're going to have trauma, PTSD, and issues, but you can get fixed to a point where you can live a productive life. Then there are mental health issues that you don't get help, and then, unfortunately, you've had the childhood trauma, and then you've grown into an adult that never got help, and you turn into a narcissist, with personality disorder, and that's also genetic, by the way. So, and I know that for a fact. So those people, you know, we all have narcissism in us. That's just fact. But there are people that have a narcissistic personality disorder. So take the trauma that never got help, the personality disorder, and then they turn into sociopath or psychopath. And those people can't be fixed. And unfortunately, it's coming out more and more and more, and I'm sure we can all agree to this, because I know just from my crew of friends that went to high school together that are divorced, all of our ex-husbands have had childhood trauma. And they've all turned into narcissistic sociopaths. So, and I'm sure you guys could probably say something similar. So if you don't get help at a young age or before your brain is fully developed, for men, it's, for boys, it's 25, 26, 27, something like that, then you are going to end up an adult. And like you said, Jennifer, you ended up going with an adult that was the same as your ex. And that's another pattern on our end as women or men, goes both ways, that if we don't fix ourselves, and I'm 6 years in and I have not been able to have a healthy relationship. Well, I only had one after my ex-husband, but I don't trust anybody because all I see are red flags, because all these young men have had childhood trauma and have grown up into unhealthy adults. So, but we end up a magnet for them, and they end up a magnet for us unless we fix ourselves. And then once we get fixed, all we see are red flags. So it's a very big problem from A to Z, because we have no normal adults out there that have been through childhood trauma that never got help. And then we have the broken system that causes these problems. And then it's just, we have a messed up world. Look, majority of people in prison have had childhood trauma that they never got help. So they ended up abusers, addicts, violence, murderers. So it's a cycle that just keeps going around and around and around and around. Okay, I'm sorry. Go on.
No need to apologize. I tend to be not so fatalistic, because I think it's always important to have hope. I'm not saying you're not saying that that's not the case, but I think, you know, it is a generational cycle, and until that gets broken, the numbers are only going to increase. I think you know, part of the solution is that, you know, our state and our country, but our state is like next to the last in terms of the state and the dollar amount that we spend per person on mental health. It's like $32 a person, and for mental health services. And what's staggering is in Central Florida, in the past few years, an astounding number of people, it's more than half that are at the poverty level. They're getting their mental health services from emergency rooms and the jail. That's where they're getting the majority of their mental health services. Our country, and our state especially, we have a shortage of trauma-informed counselors and therapists. Mm-hmm. And so we have a shortage, and then we have majority of people that are not even getting mental health services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not even really getting prevention services a lot, you know, and regular checkups, dental checkups, things like that. But for the mental health component, as well as substance mm-hmm. abuse help, we don't fund it. It's not a priority. They can say it's a priority, mm-hmm. meaning they, the people that are deciding and on our budgets, which is our elected officials. So I, you know, I say, and this is the part of the organizations, is that with the League of Women Voters, I became, I knew someone that was a member, and it was empowering because I learned about the process and with what your vote means, right? Like your vote means this, and then holding officials accountable. Or mm-hmm. running for an elected, if that's something, you know, to make things a better place, and use your experiences and people's passions to really make a difference for everybody. And so, you know, that's where I'm trying to turn my experiences and what I've had to continue to unfortunately see my kids have to go through needlessly. And other family members as well, because it impacts everyone. And to make a positive, to make a change, to make a systemic change. And so I think that the more education, the more awareness, the more specific, mm-hmm. you know, things that recommendations, you know, different acts, right, that people can do and making sure they're implemented properly is really, really important. And that should really be where the funding goes. And it's a slippery slope because elected officials need to get money to run. And so it becomes this, you know, really, really, you know, deep, dark cycle of, you know, legislation that's getting prioritized, not because it's for the good of the citizens of Florida, but because it's good for those that are running, and with their, you know, campaign, contribution fund amount. So, I think we need, but real leaders and people that are experiencing these things, you know that you can become, and are, you know, capable of speaking up and making great accomplishments and strides, and in fact probably the better kinds of servants to the community and giving recommendations and having a voice. It's super important. Our kids do not have a voice enough in our country, and they deserve to have one too.
Yes, well, children are possessions through the court system, and they're not treated as human beings. They're treated as just
property,
objects.
Property. Mm-hmm. Yeah, chattel.
You know, going to the mental health portion, you know, I'm an insurance broker. I'm in the healthcare industry. And so I know all the different, and that's how I got into my advocating, actually, when my oldest son had a breakdown in the middle of all of our crazy, the post-separation abuse. And I was fighting to get him the best help, and I had private insurance. And you know, you can have all the private insurance you want, but, you know, the insurance companies are not really there to help with your mental health. You know, when it comes to physical health, they have absolutely no choice. When it comes to mental health, it's not visible. So, you know, but what they don't realize is that, you know, if you don't allow these children to get the amount of time that they need in whatever situation route you go to get the help, if you don't give it, they're just not going to get better. It's just going to be a vicious cycle for them. So, and like you said, you know, we have a shortage. Now, we don't have a shortage of substance abuse facilities in South Florida. Or in Florida altogether. You have one, you know, in different areas, you have one in every block. The problem is they're not getting the mental health portion, the proper mental health portion there. And as far as dual programs, you don't have enough of that. And I'm dealing with the mental health right now for one of my children. And those with private insurance, you have very, very few options if you want a good place. And even finding a very good place comes to a point where they feel like they can't help you anymore. They dump you. I just went through this. And so what then? All these months of this and then goodbye, and you're left to your own. So how many kids, if they don't have proper support or an advocate like their mom, like me, who fights, like I fought for my life and for their lives, you know, they can end up right back where they started. And the insurance companies already spend hundreds of thousands of dollars for what? So it's crazy cycle. Yeah.
Well, also mental and emotional issues lead to physical issues.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, if you have a substance abuse issue, whether it's self-medicating or drinking or inflicting pain, whatever it is, or eating disorder, it all stems from a trauma. And people are numbing their pain with any of those things. And
right, but
you know,
yeah. even if they're not, though, there's the stress, the love, like that creates hypertension, that creates heart disease, that creates cancer. The
right.
immune system gets compromised. But
it's all from
mental
health. It's all from mental health. They go hand in hand. Physical health
will affect
your mental health.
Yeah, from the trauma.
And your mental health will, and that's where the ACEs comes in. You know, when I watched Rachel Mayerchik, right? I think that was her name. She did a documentary. I don't know, Jeanette, if you ever had a chance to watch it. I have to send you guys the link. It's on, I forgot what it's called. But she had done this documentary. She was asked to come from England to do a documentary to some Iowa or something on this old woman who went through domestic violence, and he finally died, or she finally got away in her 70s or whatever. She was in her 80s at the time of the documentary, and her son was in his 50s. He never got married, obviously, but she stayed, and she was abused for a very long time. But it was an incredible documentary, but at the end there was a whole panel, and they brought in all these specialists, and the panel I don't think you can see anymore, but it was incredible. You had young adult survivors. You had actually Jennifer, Jennifer's Law was named after two Jennifers. One of them, her kids were on. And there's a movie coming out of her story. He watched his father kill his mom, you know. And so you had such an incredible variety of people on that panel talking. And that's where I learned about ACEs. And when I did my research, I cried because I was thinking to myself, my kids probably have a high score of ACEs. I never heard of it before. And ACEs is adverse childhood experience and trauma. They talk about the physical health. My middle son, who saved my life, has cancer. And it's stable, thank God, right now, but he's had 4 surgeries. And this started when he was 17. And so, you know, now he's dealing with his mental health finally. But I'm witnessing what happens just for my children when there's domestic violence involved. And I don't know, Jennifer, if you know that I was married 21 years. I was married longer, but I was with this man 21 years. I did not even know I was an abused woman. And there are many, many, many women out there. Jeanette, I think for a long portion of her marriage, mm-hmm. did not realize she was an abused woman because nobody knew about any of these things.
The entire time, had no idea. 19 years.
10 years ago. I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, I was going to say, and because I did not realize what I was going through and what was going on behind doors was domestic abuse because it was nonviolent, I also did not recognize my emotional trauma that I was going through. Mm-hmm. And the trauma that my child was going through. And when I think about it today, not knowing and, you know, the ignorance and the helplessness, I look at a small child and I think of my own and the things that I did not recognize that was going on in her mind and in her heart and in her, you know, in her emotions. And I break down so many times. All I have to do is look at a child and it brings me back and it makes me so incredibly sad that mm-hmm. I did not know the signs because I did not know what was happening. And that's what fuels my passion to bring awareness, not only for victims and children, but to bring awareness to just the general public to know that this is going on, as well as lawmakers and law enforcement, the court system, and anyone else that needs to know this information to make changes to this world so that this does not happen to anyone else.
Right. You know,
I agree. I didn't know that nearly one in three women would be victims of abuse, and I didn't even know what those signs mm-hmm. were.
Exactly.
You know when I learned that I was an abused woman? When my husband, he beat me, and it was probably the best thing he ever did. And I'm not going to say there wasn't violence throughout my marriage. It just was never really on me. And there was anger issues. You know, we make excuses. We always chalk it up to something else. But I went to, so that's when we separated. And I started getting help at a women's shelter. I started going for group therapy, and I met my therapist who to this day is my therapist 6 years later. And I started listening to these women's stories. And that's when I realized that I was an abused woman. I had no idea. And this is just 6 years ago. So for all those women out, you know, that don't know they're being abused, we're telling you, if these things are happening to you, you're being abused. If you're being controlled, or you're being verbally attacked, or manipulated, or mentally attacked, or whatever, financially controlled, sexually forced to have sex, all these things go under the umbrella, of course, of control, and that is domestic violence, domestic abuse. So please get help and get, you know, find a safe place, tell somebody, you know, always find a safe place and a safe way to get help, because when they realize that you start to suspect that something's not right, or you try to get out, that's when they become the most dangerous. When they start to lose control, that's when they're the most dangerous, and that's when my ex became dangerous. Go on.
All abuse is because the abuser wants power, control, dominance, and breaking mm-hmm. down your boundaries. And mm-hmm. as they abuse you through many different ways, which most abuse is nonviolent, and violence is the escalation of all the other parts of abuse. And all the different types of abuse are physical, sexual, verbal, mental, emotional, spiritual, financial, and legal. And then once you leave them, they want revenge from you, which is called post-separation abuse. And mm-hmm. that's when a victim is up to 75% more likely to be murdered. And not mm-hmm. only that, their children are used mm-hmm. in that post-separation abuse by either physically harming them, murdering them, or mentally and emotionally
to hurt them.
You in their revenge. And they mm-hmm. are just... They're used as a strategy,
mm-hmm.
and DCF needs to know this, and courts need to know this, and law enforcement needs to know this, and lawmakers need to know this.
And I would say the mental health counselors need to know this too, because a lot of them don't.
They don't.
And so I'm very thankful that my therapist is, she does specialize in domestic abuse. In fact, Jennifer, mm-hmm. you are familiar with Harbor House, which is Orange County in Florida's domestic violence.
The
shelter that we have here. And so it's just dumbfounding that we as a society aren't recognizing what really is happening, and that's where we come in, because it has gotten so far that we are now uniting around the country and the world to bring attention to all of this, because it's been hidden and people have been silenced, and now we're speaking out, and I believe we're right on the cusp of bringing true awareness and change.
I agree.
Go on.
I agree. Yeah, no, it's okay. I think everything you said is spot on, Jeanette. And as well as, you know, just because you're married to the person that is doing these horrible, abusive things to you doesn't make it okay. And I mean, if look at it this way, if this was a stranger doing this to you, we treated much different, right? But just because somebody gets married doesn't mean that they're signing on to, for better or worse, to me, and I would think most logical people, doesn't mean you can treat me and kick me and just try to torment me like you would a hostage, like terrorize me, right? I mean, I don't think anybody, I would hope, doesn't think that that's what vows mean, right? And so I really think that the institutions and the courts, right, and the law enforcement, I think they need to be provided with the education and the tools and to be able to protect people from being abused, as well as prevent it from even happening in the first place, but especially once it has happened and then prevent, you know, stop it. But I just really think that if that the judges and the police are believing the abusers. Now, I mean, there are abusers everywhere, right? I mean, if one in three women are being abused or domestic violence, I mean, people in society, there's a high number of abusers, right? So unfortunately, there are abusers that are in these positions, right, of authority. And a lot of times, like with the power control wheel, they gravitate to those positions, right? That's why I think vetting and judges is really important, as well as also they do it in law enforcement, but, you know, making sure that the vetting is and the psychological testings they do, are updated and incorporate these kinds of things. But I just really think that it's important if we as a society want to consider ourselves to be, like you had talked and said earlier as well, Bailey, if we want to, like, you know, can be at the forefront and be leading as a country, as a democracy, as innovative, our economy and prosperity and all of those things, we have to address domestic violence and abuse that is going on to children and to our citizens and to that's impacting our society and our economy. Because if we don't start addressing these things, then we're going to be losing ground big time. So whether people care for because it's the right thing to do, or whether they care because it's economically the right thing to do,
right?
Okay. Check both of the boxes. But the right. time has come to that this can't be ignored any longer. And I think you guys are. I'm telling you, I'm at a point where I've had enough. And this. You know, I'm like ready to shout it from the mountains. And for those that are experiencing abuse and are in it, just please know you're not alone, and that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you can come out on the other side, and that there are you know, resources. And Bailey, I don't know if you have something that or a link that you put up for like the National Domestic Violence, you know, a coalition or something where people can call to get a help or whatever. But there are resources.
I can add a link. I can add a link to
okay,
the show.
Okay. Awesome. But there are organizations that can help. There just needs to be more of them. And there is a network, like you talked about, Billy, with the Protective Parents and with the court watchers and having court observers.
Yeah.
I really think that's super important as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just thinking how...
I think the court observers are wonderful because as you're watching someone go through their court hearing, judges will be hopefully clued in. If there are people watching, there's a reason for that. And especially
I think some may be a little bit more intimidated or mindful, but when there's so much corruption going on, when there is a network in that courtroom of corruption, they don't give a crap who's watching. All they know is going home with lots of money.
I think we can agree to disagree on that because the more people watch, I think people that, I mean, I'm not saying that there are people that don't, but more people can attest to it. It will spread. And I just had court watchers for the first time at a hearing, the behavior was quite different by the judge.
Right, but I'm talking about huge networks throughout Florida, throughout every single state, okay, in the United States, where judges, lawyers, psychiatrists, social workers, counselors, guardian ad litem, are part of an organization, okay? And they're being uncovered little by little. We have a few in Miami, we already know about. One that's already been uncovered. The problem is they're not being charged, or nothing has happened even though they've been uncovered. So we need more and more to be uncovered and actually justice to be served. And that's the next step, because we already have people doing the dirty work, but then who's taking over and making them pay? But so the ones that are so corrupted and getting away with it for so long, and they're so networked involved, like with the attorneys and the, you know, the court officers, okay, all the court officials, the ones that are so, they don't care because they've gotten away with it for so long. But that part of what we are trying, what we want to get done, what we want to see done is it, uncovered with more and more. We want to show statistics of this happening over and over, county by county. And then we hope from there to have justice served. So, but like you were saying, there are judges out there that are newer and they're not used to having court watchers there, or they're new to a case, or, you know, they're maybe not so much part of a network. So yes, in those situations, it absolutely will make a difference. Like I said, the ones that are so in deep with the $80 billion or $50 billion business, they don't care. Because I've already watched a couple of really corrupted cases, and there were quite a bunch of us on there, and there were quite a bunch in data.
Yeah, I was going to say, hopefully with the Violence Against Women's Act, which adds Hayden's Law to it.
That's only going to change if states take that on.
Right. And hopefully we can bring enough awareness nationwide that enough victims and survivors and groups influence legislators in their state to pass laws that support Kaden's Law, which gives federal funding to give training to the proper people. And hopefully that training will bring enough awareness in the family court law system that will provide accountability.
Go on, sorry.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Thanks. I was just going to say, I totally hear what you're saying about, you know, the people that the behaviors have been, you know, deplorable and who are, you know, they're propagating the corruption. I'm not saying that court watchers are going to change their behavior, but court watchers can be the data gatherers. I mean, you're talking about getting statistics. You're not going to get statistics unless you're in the courtroom taking the note, right? So,
100%.
So that's where I think court watching is super, super important.
I love it. It's amazing.
And with the VAWA reauthorization and the additional funding, you know, the states, they obviously don't have to accept, you know, certain legislation if they choose not to, which it seems crazy to me if it's going to protect kids. But in addition, though, if they do, then it's tied to funding, right?
Right.
So they'll get additional
funding.
So
we hope that that's going to be enticing. Right. Right. We hope it's enticing enough for them.
Exactly.
Because
another economic consideration is, you know, people moving to Florida, right? Businesses and their employees, they want to know, how's your mental health? How are your wraparound services? You know, what's the mental health access like? What can you provide my employees? What's the housing situation like? What are your schools like? You know what I mean?
We hope I've been saying, don't move to Florida. You know, if you move to Florida and you're a family with children, make sure you have a very good prenup and that it's valid in Florida. Because if this 50-50 gets this whole crazy, 17? I'm sorry, you broke up, or I broke up. I didn't hear you.
It's the alimony bill.
SB 796. Tonight I wrote again to Governor DeSantis, his wife, and Lieutenant Governor to beg them to veto this. And I told some of my story of how this is going to affect not only me and what I've gone through for 19 years and especially through post-separation abuse for 3 years, but for everyone that has gone through it, everyone that's going through it now, everyone in the future, that the law needs to protect those who need it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just can't stress enough that laws are supposed to protect people who need it. And this law goes completely against that. And I just have to hope and pray that the money behind this bill that's padding people's pockets, you know,
that the governor sees that. Let's just say
unfortunately, I don't think.
From what I heard, he has not signed it yet because I think he's starting to see things are not so. So 100%, from what I heard.
I hope not.
So who knows? I think that if he was going to do it, he would have done it already. I think he's very hesitant. So I tag him on Instagram for all my shows. So let him hear our stories, you know, let him hear, you know, who knows if he will, but.
Yeah, I know that he, you know, everything is a show for him, and he's signing a big bill every day, and so they're, you know, every day in the news, oh, he signed this one, oh, he signed that one, and so it's a production and publicity.
This one will not be a production because he'll be getting a lot of flack. But before we go back to Jennifer, I want to just say how, you know, it took a very, very long time for psychologists and counselors to finally realize, you know, you went to a psychologist, go back 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, and they did not know about any of these things, domestic violence, narcissistic abuse. They had no idea because it was not in the DM guidebook. It was not in their psychology book. Now, the new one, the updated one, narcissistic abuse is in there, sociopathy is in there,
yes.
All these other things.
Yes.
So
yes,
when people,
five.
When, what did you say, what
the,
I call
the DSM.
Yeah, DSM. Okay.
It's the
yes. I call this a DM. Yeah, the new version. So, because I actually was looking through it. People are now, that are becoming therapists and psychologists, whatever, are going back quite, like maybe 6-8 years, they're starting to get trained or certified in all these other different areas. So you have ones that specialize in trauma, specialize in domestic violence and eating disorders, all these different, they're, it's becoming more and more in the mental health world, it's becoming more and more, you know, the thing, whatever you want to call it, to get more knowledgeable on all these other different parts of mental health. And that's where all the studies are starting to come up because people are starting to do more and more studies. But in the same way as all these mental health officials are getting, or doctors are getting trained or getting certified or learning about all these different things, it has to happen. Like you said, judges need that kind of training. You know, lawyers need that kind of training. Our police need that kind of training. Anybody that has to deal with people in society that are going through these horrific situations need to have trainings or understanding that nothing's cut and dry. No case is going to be, you know, the perfect, happy, 50-50, co-parenting situation. And as far as domestic violence, you know, it, again, it's not just physical. Domestic violence, the worst kind of domestic violence is non-physical. You know, my bruises from 6 years ago are gone. They faded
right.
Within a couple of months. The mental, the verbal, the manipulation, the control, all of that stays with you. That stays with you. You know, these are things that don't
scars.
Go away. They're permanent
yeah.
scars. It shapes mm-hmm. you into a new person. You know, hopefully you get the right help with the right kind of professionals that are knowledgeable, and you're able to you become a new person, a new you. And but those scars will forever stay with you. And just imagine you're an adult. Imagine children, you know.
Yes.
Some of them think this is the norm.
Well,
when society
says you are supposed to be with a parent, even if a parent is abusive, teaches a child that abuse is okay
mm-hmm,
and is
mm-hmm.
acceptable. And mm-hmm. so they go through life thinking abuse is mm-hmm. acceptable. And that's what right. creates the what we've gone through, which is being in relationships that are abusive. And then once mm-hmm. we're through one, we go to another, because we are not taught as children that abuse is not okay. And so we accept it as part of a relationship. And as I was starting to say earlier, my counselor is trained in domestic abuse through mm-hmm. Harbor House of Orange County and mm-hmm. has worked with them before, which has been invaluable to my healing, because I've recognized my self-worth and that mm-hmm. I don't have to be with somebody that mm-hmm. is abusive, because I now know my self-worth. And I'm very thankful that I recognize it, and I don't think that I will allow someone to treat me that way, because I've reached that point in my healing process.
And then we have another factor of where people that have been abused grow up to be abusers. So like I was saying before, it's a vicious cycle, and we must end the cycle of abuse, because no matter what, we're ending up with mental health issues, we're becoming abusers, or we're continuing by engaging in relationships that are abusive. And, you know, so, and then again, getting the proper help is another issue in the healthcare industry. You know, the more that we bring the knowledge out there, and the more that we bring the awareness out there, I mean, just in the few years, like just in the last year, in the last 6 months, I mean, I see, just since I started my advocating, the changes and the people coming forward and the stories, and it's incredible. You know, you can listen to all my shows. We're on our 51st show. And, you know, we have people that have been on my show, you know, survivors, fighters, warriors, that are professionals, doctors, you know, all different kinds. Jennifer, you know, is a professional involved with all kinds of different things. And Jeanette is an extremely intelligent woman. I mean, I haven't had women, especially in Florida, who've shared stories that are not intelligent. They're all extremely, so that's why I was saying about the show, this can happen to anyone.
There was a story, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there was a story recently about, I think it was someone that was very well known that, I can't remember if she was like a media person and she specialized in domestic violence or domestic abuse. And she got involved with someone who was abusive, and she got away from that person. And I think it was in the last year she was murdered. I don't remember what state it was, but I remember that she was specialized in domestic violence. So, I mean, anyone could be manipulated, because, as we all know, abusive people wear a mask to hide their true selves, and they love bomb us. They present themselves in just an amazing way that no one knows who they really are until it's too late.
Yeah.
Which I think we all.
I think those are all really good points, Jeanette. You said something too, Jeanette, earlier that really resonated, and I think it's deserving of repeating. is that this generational cycle, this repeated pattern, and how trauma children grow up to, especially boys, to be, mm-hmm. you know, just abusers, right? And because, like what you were saying, when judges and law enforcement, when in the guardian ad litem, the, you know, the quote unquote professionals, when they keep normalizing and downplaying abuse, mm-hmm. and trying to excuse it, and instead of saying, whoa, this is wrong, this is not okay, and then these kids are forced to experience it, and that's their normal, right? That's what they grow up, the behavior they see, and how mm-hmm. and how, you know, it's okay to treat my mom like that, apparently, I guess. I'll mm-hmm. I mean, and that, you know, and that it sets such a bad example, and it's reinforcing bad behavior mm-hmm. at the victim's expense. So if the laws and the legislators really wanted to do right by our children, 50-50 is completely, you know, ignorant, and it shows the obtuseness. And it should be protecting, and the child's protection should be the first and foremost, and then you can do the others. But just because you are a parent, man or woman, doesn't give you the right to keep on, you know, abusing people, and it should continue to stay like that.
And just because you're a parent doesn't mean that you are a good parent, or know how to parent, or are able or capable of being a parent. You could bring a child into this world and not be have the instincts of being a parent. And that's something it's just totally like, because when you have so much hate for the other parent of your child, you are not a good parent. You're not putting your child first. You're putting your hate for the other person first. And if you are capable of that, you're capable of anything. And that's what's motivating you to want custody of your child. You are not a good parent. So not everybody's.
Well, it's not even wanting custody. It's wanting to cause misery to the other person, to the victim.
That's
right.
My point. I mean, that's my point. But somebody that loves their child, okay? Two parents that can't get along but love their children are going to put the children's interest, the best interest of their children. And there are many, many people out there that do this, you know, and they may have 50-50, but you know what? It works better if the child sleeps in the same bed every single night. So,
every family's different. No family operates the same way anyway.
Right. But I'm saying, if two parents love their children and are putting the best interest of the children first, they're going to do whatever is best for that child. However, which way they decide or they figure it out. But if it has to go to a family court where there are all these people coming together, making the decisions, and they're an organization of people who are making billions of dollars, nobody's thinking about the best interest of the child. You know, you hear these stories after stories after stories after stories, and no one's... All these people, or let's say in our case, all these mothers, are not making up a story. There's so many of them that we're not colluding, okay? And so something's wrong. That's the message I'm trying to get out. There's a problem, and we need change, because, like I said before, and I'll repeat it over and over, this is our children, whatever age they are, our future, and they are the next generation that will run this world or this United States or whatever, or this country. And if we don't end this crazy cycle and all these crazy laws or whatever, or all these, break down all these bad organizations that are not there in the best interest of these children, then we really, what will this world come to?
Yeah. Well, no, I completely agree. I completely agree. I think one quick thing to add on to that is that the 50-50, that requires co-parenting as well.
Yes.
And I hear in these high conflict cases like mine, the judges are like, well, obviously these parents both have issues, they can't get along. And it's like, if somebody is an addict, they are selfish beyond whatever, because because that's all they can think about, right? And so there's no way anyone can co-anything with someone that isn't, that has substance abuse, let alone mental health problems, that are right of a personality disorder. So for these judges thinking, oh, it must be, you know, both parents. No, I mean, give me a break. You're telling me I have to co-parent with somebody who's got a history like this and who's been abusive and I've had injunctions against? Like, really? How, like, again, defies logic.
Well, when when you're going through custody, if it's two safe parents, there is not going to be a fight because they're both going to look child.
They'll never make it to a courtroom.
One safe parent
never go into a courtroom.
And one non-safe parent, that's when there's an issue. That's when there is a fight. And the court also doesn't recognize that unsafe parents are willing to lie and manipulate and do whatever they can just to hurt their children and the safe parent.
What I was going to say was addicts are only looking for their next fix, and they'll do whatever they have to do to get to that next fix. So tell me, how is somebody that is very, very ill, okay, because they have this addiction issue and it's mental health related, and their only focus is getting that fixed, how are they going to parent? So I look at the same thing as a parent who, look at it from another point of view, a person who hates the other parent so much that it's a fix almost. Getting back at them, hurting them, punishing them in every possible way. How are they going to be a good parent? Because their sole focus is on hurting that other parent. That's all they're thinking about. It's the same thing. It's their addiction, their obsession. Yes, and it stems from mental health issues.
Also an addiction.
Yes, abuse is an addiction. Yes, it is. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, you have to look at all these factors, and there's statistics, and there's science, and there's evidence, and there's all these things behind it, and it's totally disregarded and ignored. And the problem is that all these organizations are working hand in hand. There's so much money involved, and that's all they care about, and that's their addiction. It's money. It's their greed. It's money.
And
so,
that's also
legislation. We watched it with our own eyes. You know, we watched how Grayson's law passed round one unanimously, you know, and never made it to round two. And when I was watching, and I spoke about this before, when I was watching Senator Grouse, she was for the abortion ban, and I was watching her not like stone cold ice, you know, listening to some of her peers talk about their stories because they wanted to have provisions put into that, and
She's a representative. Yeah.
Right. And she just totally disregarded, but when I saw that, that was a huge eye opener, because I've never watched. I mean, you know, watching everybody be so empathetic and so so caring and understanding the first round with Grayson's Law, and then watching this when it came to the abortion ban, 15 weeks. I had never experienced that in my life, and I said something is not right with that woman, and you know, and then I started understanding more and more about what goes on, and with these organizations backing them, and yes, they're running for re-election and campaigning, and so it was like, this is their greed and addiction of having power.
Yeah.
And not caring about women that have been raped or incest or someone not knowing they're pregnant. I have a friend who lives right next door. One of her very close friends was 6 months pregnant and didn't know. She was on the pill. She had no idea. She did not know. I saw a picture of her, okay? She did not know she was pregnant. Now, she was happily married. It was unexpected, and she's having the baby. But what if someone is young and they're just not in a healthy place and it's bad timing? And now personally, I would not, if the baby is able to live outside the womb, personally, I'm not for abortion. But if there are certain, it can't be all or none. There are circumstances to every situation. There are circumstances, you know, and that's like
and
the 50-50 and the alimony and the abortion ban. I mean, there has to be exceptions. There has to be provisions in every single law, because no two are the same. No 10 are the same.
When you think of laws and you think of protecting people, you have to think of the very worst of the worst. And is this bill or is this law helping the worst of the worst? So, I mean, I wrote about the abortion bill, and, you know, I'm not pro-abortion, but I do believe there should be exceptions considering certain circumstances. And I wrote a very powerful story about my personal situation of something that happened to me when I was a teenager, and it was horrific. And when I was a teenager, this incident happened, and it was not only one person, it was many. And in this situation, I hid it because I blamed myself, because I felt at that point in my teenage unformed brain that I put myself in this position at this point, and so therefore it was my fault. So I hid it. Well, I was young. I was 15, and it would have been possibly months before I discovered that I was even pregnant, and then not even wanting to tell somebody about it. How long after that would I have come forward? And then I'm also going through the trauma of what happened to me and trying to process just the experience alone, and then possibly having a child that was the result of all of that experience. And how long would I need for all of this to make a sound decision that is life-altering for me, for the people who did it, and for the child who is the result of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they took that into account when they decided on this. I think they were very close-minded.
It was all money. It was all money, yeah. Based. This is the problem. This is why it's very, very scary, because these when you have people that have so much power, that are running the country, that are running the state, and there's so much money in it for them, they're not thinking about anybody. It's like an addiction. It's,
yes,
it's like
it
the greed has power. become more important. Look, that senator that was murdered, I mean, this happened 10, 12 years ago, but it came out now that senator, I forgot where she was from. They said it was a murder-suicide, but now they're claiming it wasn't. And I think it may be being investigated. I'm not sure. Where she came forward and she spoke about all the corruption in family court and in DCF and every part of it. She spoke about it, and she wanted laws changed. And her husband were found murdered, and they claimed it was a murder-suicide. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I did not hear that story. Jennifer, did you?
We posted it everywhere.
Was it in Florida?
No, it was not in Florida. Oh, I forgot what her name is. I'll send it to you guys. I'll find the link to it. It was just all over social media recently. And obviously it wasn't mainstream media that brought it up. But it happened quite some time ago, over a decade ago, but it was just brought to light now. And she actually came forward. But look at the extent that her own colleagues, the government, somebody in the inside, made it look like it was a murder-suicide to get rid of her. So
yeah, I don't know. I didn't hear about that. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff.
No, but I mean, if you listen to her speech, it's everything we're talking about now. All the corruption, everything that's going on in courts and everything. And she uncovered it. And the next thing you know, she's gone. And her husband is gone, and they made it. And now I think it's coming out that it might have not been a murder-suicide. Now, will it be investigated? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the FBI will... I mean, their government officials will investigate. Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know enough to talk about this. I'm not familiar with it, so I'm sorry.
I'll send you the link.
There's only like 12 minutes left. Jennifer, what do you think?
Yes.
Since you're the guest tonight, what are some points that you want to make sure are broadcast during, the podcast that you are the guest of?
Jeanette, first off, I just want to say I'm very sorry that you had to experience that, and I hope you know it was not your fault, and you shouldn't have had to go through that. And I appreciate I really appreciate you having me on and having these discussions and all the time and effort and advocacy that you're doing to further bring protections and justice and healing to victims and as well as increase prevention. That's the goal, right? Is to completely zero abuse. I guess a few points is, the data is there, the statistics are there, this is a problem. It's a global problem, and it's a local problem. And I would say, well, first of all, I think accountability is really important. And I think, you know, court watching, I think report cards, I think at candidate forums, we talked about Rep. Grawl. She's running for the Senate. I think it's important to, with candidate forums, remind them how they voted. And they're not following the data. They're not following when they speak on these bills and the majority of the time, it is what they're saying is either inaccurate. It doesn't have on the Florida bar, they are not in favor of the 50-50 alimony. I mean, I'm just saying, when you continue to go against experts and still pass legislation, that's problematic. And experts, I mean, they're following the data and the research, and it's not just an interest group, right? In addition, I think in addition to accountability, number two is that we need to fund and make it a priority and a mindset for mental health, for trauma, and provide in addition to the funding. Three is the legislation and the laws and hopefully the fourth being obviously there needs to be the awareness, right? And then having synergy and connection between all of that, right? So with one, we have accountability, two, we have the funding, and three, we have legislation, and then the awareness tying it all together that will then make us a resilient community and raising children and families and future leaders and business owners and innovators and all these things to make not only our families and our kids and our lives and as well as our state and our country the best it can be. But it's also the right thing to do, right? I mean,
right.
It shouldn't even be a political thing. If we have, you know, leaders who really care and really and are really wanting to have legislation, and judges who really want to have successful outcomes to their cases, and businesses that want to have, you know, earnings that are, you know, can only increase and a really solid workforce and all of these things, then domestic violence and abuse needs to be a focus because that is the source, not the symptom of so many of these issues we're having with substance abuse, with gun violence, with gang violence, with affordable housing, with homeless, with hunger, with our school, our children's education, with all of these things. If people really dig, and it's not even that deep, it goes back to that is a significant trauma. So I really think that those are important things to focus on, and the storytelling is really important to bring you know people and faces and situations that are occurring every few seconds in our country so people can really understand what's going on in our neighborhoods
hidden behind closed doors.
Yep.
Well, it's not going to be hidden anymore because we're not
exactly.
allowing it.
That's true.
So, you know, the more we need to become as powerful as these organizations, as these greedy addicts, and we just have to become huge across the United States. And you know, just not keep quiet. Keep bringing every story possible out there. every professional out there coming forward with statistics and science and research, and you know, the public says the public are the voters, and we have to let them know we will come after you, and we will take away your position because we have the power, because this is not what we want, and you work for us. Although they don't think that, but they, you know, we're the voters in the end. And when the voting is not corrupted, you know, hopefully that will get fixed eventually. But, you know, the more people, like you said, come out there, share their stories, bring awareness, show what's going on. Yes, and the school systems, you know, education in the school systems are big, is huge. Education in every organization is very important, you know, and I think family court needs to be broken down to very small, to a very small, you know, room of people. And, you know, it has to change. Something's got to give. And I think the more we bring out the corruption of what's going on with all these groups of people that are not doing the right thing by our children, the more we expose them, you know, and like you said, accountability. Judges, guardian ad litem, counselors, lawyers, these people that don't make proper decisions and are profiting from those bad decisions, and children's lives are forever changed, or they are taken from us, or a spouse is taken from this world, or murdered, they need to be held accountable. You can't go around murdering people and destroying people and get away with it. And they should be in that same category. There are, like you said, tons of children and families that are just destroyed, and it doesn't end. Like you said, you get divorced, it doesn't end. I'm in criminal court now. Violation of a restraining order. It's a joke there too. It's I'm a number, you know, and we don't want laws in children's names. We don't want laws in women's names or men's names or whatever. Laws are there to protect, not after a disaster. So,
well, I think that our number broke. So yes, we are in numbers. We are numbers, but our numbers are growing, and we're uniting.
Yes.
And like
yes.
The national groups, well, with VAWA, that's very pivotal in bringing the states together and groups together with our state, Florida, with One Mom's Battle, who she's amazing with.
Mm-hmm.
The National Safe Parents Coalition, Custody Peace, and we're all now coming together, and we are bringing this out in the open. And I believe that we're just three people out of millions that are uniting right now.
Yeah,
100%. Well, 100%. And as you say that we're a number, but there's power in numbers.
Numbers.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So with that, I'm going to close up the show. Jennifer Adams, thank you so much for being here tonight. And Jeanette, I always enjoy having you on. You can be on whenever you want. Be my co-host. Be a host. Thank you so much, and for sharing your story as a young child. You know, it goes to show, you know, the history, the pattern, and that you can get healthy, you can get help, you can get out of abusive situations if you don't ever give up, never give up, and you keep fighting. And again, awareness, education, power in numbers of all of us coming together. I want to thank Joe Cox for giving me this Blog Talk Radio time, and for my Charlie, who helped me, was my co-host for many shows way in the beginning and then pushed me out to be on my own. Thank you. I'll always be grateful to you too. To my guests, to my listeners out there, thank you. I will attach the links to the show that I will have the show uploaded to. I will put the National Domestic Violence phone number out there as a link. And my shows can all be found on my website, thenevergiveupshow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, next month, April, is Sexual Abuse Awareness Month, and I will try to focus on that. To be a guest, please be in touch. Again, never give up.
With a little perseverance, you can get things done. That has conquered some, and nobody wants to know you now, and nobody wants to show you how bad you're lost on your own. You can never surrender, and if you're back on me, you hold. You can never surrender, and when the night is cold and dark, you can see light, 'cause no one